in this ongoing weekly study of Bhagavad Gita. We started the 13th chapter on our previous class day, that is Friday, in the month of January, not the last Friday but the previous one. Bhagavad Gita, as it is described in this beginning chant, it destroys the bondage of this world that we are caught in, coming again and again in this body as a matter of compulsion. It destroys this bondage of being limited, constricted in a little physical frame, and showers the nectar of immortality by giving the knowledge of non-duality of existence, Advaitamrita Varshinim. That it, Bhagavad Gita is mother, it is described in that, Amba Tvam Anusandadhame. Amba means mother. O mother, I follow you with devotion. And how are you? Advaitam Rita Varshinim, that you are the sprinkler of the nectar of non-duality. You sprinkle that nectar of non-duality. When that is sprinkled, then all the I and the world, this distinction disappears. The knower and the known, that idea disappears. And the sense of being born and dying, that also vanishes. And thus a person becomes immortal in the true sense of the term. So, this 13th chapter is very important in understanding the concept of non-duality in Vedanta. This non-duality is to be properly understood. Otherwise, it is often, as it is done, it is taken up only as a sublime, ethereal, theoretical concept. But what is described in Vedanta is a very practical, experiential concept of non-duality. It is a matter of intense experience that the non-duality is spoken of. And we actually experience non-duality in various ways in our daily life, in day-to-day life. I can give you very tangible examples that in day-to-day life too, we experience a sense of non-duality about things which we could see as many. For example, we see take the example of a chair. Now you can think of it as so many pieces of wood put together, nailed together or stuck together. Now instead of seeing that as many, you talk, speak of it that I am sitting on a chair. You don't say that I am sitting on many, many different pieces of wood. I am sitting on a chair. Of course, sometimes when our chairs squeak, you get that idea. That is how we use the sense of non-duality too. That how the so many things we put in one unit, and thus it becomes the whole thing gets a different identity. Many are not discarded in that understanding of one, that the chair would have many different parts. That idea is not discarded, but what is seen as pieces of wood, when you look at it as pieces of wood, it is many. When you look at the same thing as chair, it is non-dual, it is one. So also we can see the whole existence. The same concept can be applied to the whole existence, that the whole existence is really a one. And that oneness is inclusive of all the multiplicity. Just as the oneness of chair does not negate or contradict or exclude the manyness of the different pieces of wood that it is made of. So also, it is not that the non-dual nature of the universe, it also does not exclude so many different things there at a level of subject-object perception. So subject-object perception, it is one thing where you have the idea of a perceiver and perceived, that I am looking at all of you. So here the sense of I is the knower, and whatever is around here in the that is perceived is known, knower and known. So this 13th chapter deals with this division, that knower and known, and its beginning is very interesting. The known is called kshetra, the field, and the knower is the one who knows that field, kshetrajna, the knower of the field. So the first verse begins, Shri Bhagavan Vacha, like I mentioned in last class, that in some versions of Bhagavad Gita, there is one additional verse here, that becomes the first verse, where Arjuna asks a question. But most traditional versions of Bhagavad Gita does not have that verse, and directly it is the Lord directly begins his discourse on what is the known, what is the knower. So he gives the whole idea in a nutshell first. Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Idam Shariram Kaunteya Kshetrametyabhidhiyate Etadyo Vetitam Prahu Kshetrajna Etitadvidah. The Blessed Lord said, this body, O son of Kunti, is called Kshetra, and that which is conscious of it is called Kshetrajna, embodied self, by those who have knowledge thereof. The translation is beautiful. This body is called the Kshetra. What is this body? A very sublime idea is presented here. This body means not only this particular thing, but whatever is analogous to it on that plane, that also is a body. And like if this body is kshetra, the object of knowledge, then this body, all bodies fall in the same category. And they are known, this body is a not knower, but known. Why this is told? This is psychologically a very important thing. Because of our identification with the body, we perceive as if this is knower, and things beyond this are known. This mistake very often happens while trying to understand Vedanta, that this world is unreal. This world does not begin from here onwards, but this also is included in that world. This also is equally unreal. So, Lord begins with this very clear understanding that, look, this body is kshetra or known object. You see this body, these hands, feet, like you see the other things, and this body also is seen. So therefore it is not subject, it is not knower, it is not I. This point is to be emphasized on our minds, that this body is not the self. The body is also just an object. And the one who knows is the self or the knower. The knower never becomes the known. It is knower. The body is known, not knower. You know the body, its functions, its physiology, anatomy, all that is known. So the body is object. And this is a great spiritual practice, friends, to look upon one's own body not as a subject. It is not the subject, but it is object. It is a very important advancement in our spiritual progress when we learn to look upon our body as an object, not as I. It is a very important step that to know that the body is not the self, it is object. It is known, it is not knower. So, this next verse gives a very important indication that the knower that we feel, who is this knower? And this verse is considered as one of the greatest lessons of non-dual Vedanta is transmitted in this second verse of the 13th chapter. And that is, Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata kshetra kshetrajnayor jnanam yatta jnanam matam mama. And know the kshetrajna, embodied self in all the bodies, kshetras, to be myself, O descendant of Bharata, O descendant of Bharata. The knowledge of the kshetra and kshetrajna, that is matter and spirit, is, in my opinion, true knowledge. This verse is so important that commentator Shankara has written a very long, elaborate commentary on this. Probably one of this longest commentaries he has written on any of a particular verse. So, what does it say? That who is the knower? Who is the knower? This body is known. Okay, understood. This body is known. Now, who is the knower? This question is very important, and I used to get this from childhood, not in this form. And many of you, I'm sure, must have felt some such sense or sensation in the childhood. Later on, it gets smothered. Not that you get the answer, but you forget about asking this question because you didn't get an answer. When you don't get answer for a long, long time, then the question is kept aside and you go about doing other things in life. So, and this question that what is this I? How was I created? Where from it came? Certainly, this was very clear that it is said that, well, you were born on such and such date. But what was before that? Where was I before that? In what state was I? That question. And where was then I before that? The question as to how this I came about was difficult to brush aside. It is this I. Who is this? We spoke that it is the knower. But what is the nature of this knower? One thing that we feel very obvious as true, which is negated in this verse, that which we take up as kind of matter of a obvious, clear understanding, that each body, each person has a separate knower in it. I here and I in Sam will be different. That I again will be different from Sheila's I, and so forth. The I in each body will be different. Obviously, I cannot have this idea that the I in me and the I of a mosquito that is biting me, how can that be same? They have to be necessarily different. When I am reading a book, the I of the book, one has to remember that each being has a consciousness associated with it. One need not create an artificial division that this is living and this is not living. You cannot divide things like that, arbitrarily fixing some criterion for life. There is really no such division. Everything pulsates with life, whether you have, whether it fits into your definition of life or not is another thing. But everything is living. Everything has I. So the food that I eat also has I. And then this I here and the I of the food, are they same or different? And what happens to the eye of the food when the food goes in my belly? It is a question. It could be understood more clearly when you say, eat a chicken. What the eye of the chicken has been now eaten? Where did it go? And what happened to that eye? What is the connection between that eye and the eye who ate? Lots of such questions come because we take for granted that I is separate in every body, and it appears so natural also because of the idea that I do something and I should get the reward for that. If I work, I should get paid. It is not that Sam works and Swami gets paid. It is the one who works should get paid. I different here, I different there. If it is said that, oh, what does it matter? That body might have worked, but I being same, let the check be given to Swami. Then naturally Sam will revolt against this idea. He would say that reverse it. Let that I do the work and let this I get the check. Because we have this ingrained idea that I is different in everything, everybody. But this is what is negated, contradicted here. That I in every body, every being, the I is God. I am the I in everyone. I am the knower in everyone. That is why in Vedanta and in Hinduism in general, they most commonly used name for God is Paramatma. Paramatma means the self of everyone. The highest self is Lord Himself. When highest in the sense when you analyze, then what you discover as the self is nothing but God. This is very difficult to accept because of the ingrained this division of I and world that we have, that at the level of matter we may understand, yes, it is all same, understood. All have similar electrons, protons, and so as matter, things are same, could be understood. But a self here and self there, they have to be different. How can the same God, one God, be the self of all? This creates another very important question too. Is God then same as I? Sounds kind of blasphemous. This little I, how can that be same as God? I, different or same? And so these so many questions come up there, that who really am I? Who is the knower? And God says very unambiguously, in just half a sentence, that in all bodies, this is the example of tremendous brevity and exemplary clarity. The brevity does not mean lack of clarity. Sometimes, in fact, too many words confuse the things. Not that using lot of words brings lot of clarity, but it is, say, half a sentence, and yet everything about this non-dual Vedanta is so clearly told, that firstly, that God, I am, I here means God. God is the self of all. And to indicate that this is in reference to the variety that you are seeing, they all bodies, all kshetras or all fields, in all different fields, the self is the same. Self is the same in all different bodies. Take up for example that Madame Tussauds wax museum. There are so many different people there. There is the statue of Churchill and maybe statue of Hitler, and so many all different people and very beautifully made statues. And somebody told that they look so real that you may think of saying hi to that statue. They are made so beautifully, so real, so exact. Now, of course, there Churchill is not same as Hitler. As beings, Churchill is different from Hitler. And Churchill again is different from Eisenhower or Picasso or whosoever other famous figures you see there. They are all different as figures. But what is the I, this inner substance, the soul of each of them? Wax. Wax is, if you examine, if you penetrate, this same is in everyone. In all of them, the self or the inner substance is exactly the same. There is absolutely no distinction there. The distinction is only superficial. What is superficial? That if you don't examine deeper, what appears, that is superficial. The name and the form, that is superficial. And the distinctions are only pertaining to that. Nothing beyond that at all. Just go a little deeper and you see that all is wax. Similarly, in all these distinctions, if you penetrate a little deeper, just a little deeper, you don't have to penetrate too deep. And just the criterion also is given that how deep you need to penetrate, where do you need to stop penetrating further to know this truth that everything is same, the I of everyone, the self of everyone is divine, and the same. There is no distinction at all. You take water from the faucet in 10, 15, 20, 100 cups. Now the cups are different, same water filled in all of them. The water doesn't become different there. The water is same, just it appears different because of the difference in the cups. So the self here means, imagine this body as a cup, this body as another cup, this body as another cup. A body of, say, a microbe here is another small cup. The body of the whole earth is kind of a rather big size cup. The body of the solar system is a still bigger cup. The body of the galaxy is still bigger cup. So you have bigger cups, smaller cups. Small cup or big cup, if the same water is filled in them, the difference, it doesn't may that difference goes away when you penetrate. So also in these all cups, when you penetrate, you find this substance, and that is same, the same one being. And that is the self of all. And how that self is? Divine. God is the self of all. And that is to be remembered, that we are all essentially, potentially divine. This truth should never be forgotten. As a spiritual aspirant, having this self-confidence is very important to march on the path of progress, that I am divine, and therefore it is possible for me to realize this. Because I am divine, if I remove the covering, I will find that divinity. And just as if you are given, say, cookies in a packet, and because that box contains cookies, if you remove the cover, you will get the cookies, because it is, the cookies are there. So similarly, there is divine in us, each of us, God is there. And so by just removing this outer cover, the divine pops out. Just as the cookies pop out when you open the box, so also when we open this box, the inner divinity pops out, comes out. And that is the goal of life. What we really seek in life is, in one word, put together as God. Many do not like this word God, because of traditionally lot of different ideas, about that punishing God or rewarding God, God staying somewhere in heaven, and so forth. And so it was said that one place, this man had to remain in working in a building, public building, and most of the public buildings these days are not, you can't smoke there. And this fellow was tremendously addicted to smoking. So his idea of God being in heaven was, there this restriction doesn't apply. So when he would go to heaven, he could smoke as much as he wants. So that these ideas about God, and then the associated the church and the all that political thing that goes along with it. Therefore, many do not want to use this word God. But the problem is, whatever word you get, you may get another word. One of our friends, Terry, he therefore likes not to use this word God, but prefers to use all that is, or everything that is, something similar. So all that exists, that is to be. But then, first of all, what you did is made a bigger, longer expression, and that also could get lot of connotations in time to come. It will get into acronym, all that is. In fact, our Swami Sarvagatananda used to say that the G-O-D is also an acronym. You can look upon it as ground of our dwelling, G-O-D, the ground of our dwelling. Anyway, so every word has this capability of being misused Because after all, we use this word. And whatever corruption we have that gets into the words that we use, that there too. So, the word God also is not an exception. The important thing here to remember here is the divinity that we think of as infinite, all-powerful, all-capable, where there is no suffering, full of bliss, full of knowledge, full of light. All that we seek, full of peace, all that we seek is contained in this word divinity. And therefore, what we really seek in life, what do we seek? We seek that peace. I want peace. I want happiness. I want knowledge. So, all that is combined in this word God. So, all, if you seek God, means you seek all these. If you get God, you get all these. So, this is our goal, and this is possible. This goal is a possible goal. Don't think that it is impossible. We associate somehow impossibility with realization of God. Sri Ramakrishna showed that how this is possible. It can be, God realization can be achieved. One step more, friends. Not only God realization is possible, not only that God realization is within our rights as human beings, and God realization is within our scope of having. Anything other is impossible. Any other achievement is impossible. It is to be remembered that we may think, oh, God realization is not possible, but let me get happiness by, say, eating cookies or ice cream or whatever. Impossible, friends. Any such idea is running after a mirage. It is not possible. It is impossibility that we run after, that getting joy from an object. It is unscientific because the joy is within and you are running out to get it. You are going in reverse direction. How are you to get it? It is impossible to get joy like that. So, therefore, God realization is not only possible, but it is the only possible way of making our lives happy and peaceful and illumined. So, therefore, let us remember this, that God says, God assures that the one knower in you, in all bodies, I am that. So God is in us. And Swami Vivekananda therefore used to say, have confidence. This self-confidence is so important. Believing in God, I believe in God, and meaningless things if you don't have self-confidence. Have this self-confidence first. Yes, God is in me. And that expresses in our attitude, our behavior. Yes, one should say, I can. No, I cannot. Then really, Swami Vivekananda says that you are thus criticizing God. You are saying that this is not possible for God. And don't say that. Anything is possible if God willing. Say that. The Muslims use this word very often. Whenever you tell them something, will you do? Okay, inshallah. If God wills, I will do it. A very good idea, inshallah. That yes, if God wishes, it will happen. It is important to feel this presence of divine in us, that yes, I can do this, the self-confidence. Without self-confidence and this positive spirit, God realization, let alone God realization, even the other mundane achievements remain far away. So, this sentence, Lord says that I am this self in all bodies. Very important thing. It is to be understood analytically that go, try to find who am I in this body. And we feel just because of our superficial perception that I here and I here and I here, they are different. But as rational scientific beings, let us continue the analysis. Where is the difference between the I of Yogatmananda and I of our great devotee Triveni? That where is the difference between the I of Yogatmananda and Triveni? I am different from her because the bodies are different. But if I am not the body, then that difference goes away. You may say our thought worlds, minds are different. But again, I am not the mind. One can go out of mind, you see. So it is, they say that, well, one man said that my wife has lost mind. How? For so many years, every day, she was giving me a piece of her mind. So now, therefore, giving every day a piece of her mind, she has now finished all that was left of it. So she has gone out of mind. So the idea is, I am not body, I am not mind. Then where are we different? Where are we different? In logic or mathematics, there is a very beautiful idea that when I first studied it, it struck me, wow, what a really rational way of seeing oneness and separateness. If two things are to be considered identical, if you do not have even a single thing that you can show as different in this and this, it is specified in the terms of sets, that two sets are different if there is at least one element in A is different from the elements in B. So there should be at least one difference that you should be able to show whereby A and B can be considered different. Now when we come to the self here and self there, what difference can we show? Whatever differences we have been showing, like the body is different, well, you are not showing the difference in self, because body is not self. So show the difference in self. Mind again is not self. So far as the self goes, you cannot show a single characteristic that differs to make it two. Without putting the framework of our mind, without loading this software, this program called mind, the idea of separation cannot come at all. There is no separation except what you program. Without that, there is no separation at all. And so, when you go beyond that, there is no distinction whatsoever. Apparently, it may look like the electricity in the sound system, electricity that is in these different lamps, electricity that is providing us the heat or so forth. All these are different. Electricities, no, if you go beyond, a little beyond to the supply line, you will see it is the same supply line that puts electricity in all of these. So the difference is not in electricity, it is in the expressions, in the shapes, in the names. That is what constitutes the differentiation. So, as self, there is no distinction. These three very important things have to be understood in this first part, in this half of this verse, that the knower is to be seen as God. The I, or the knower, the reality within, is God. So divinity of each soul is to be understood. Then sameness, solidarity of the existence, that is to also to be understood. And third thing, that this is the goal of life, that my soul is divine, and so the goal of life, actually, whatever we really are seeking is therefore possible because it is matter of discovering ourselves, just finding ourselves. If my goal is to get something from somebody, then there is it is doubtful. In fact, it can be shown that it is impossible. But when it is my own reality, you have it already. It is just to be discovered. So that idea, these three ideas are to be understood from this half part of this first, second verse. The several objections come as to what is this nature of it, and why then the distinction comes. The distinction is considered, the Vedanta uses this perception of distinction. This phenomena is again presented in one word, Maya. Maya. Maya is this word Vedanta uses. As Swami Vivekananda has clarified, Maya is not a theoretical concept. It is not an explanation. Maya is only the description of this fact that we see multiplicity, we see variety, and we therefore also suffer the consequences of seeing this variety. This fact is called Maya. And thus, everything here is in this contradiction. Existence becomes non-existence. It is shouldn't, it is a contradiction. But we say a man exists, well, is just marching towards death, waiting for death. This waiting for dying gets called as living. Similarly, the happiness and misery, they are together here. Actually, one is contradiction of another, but they coexist here. This phenomena of contradiction, love and slavery, attachment, hatred, opposite things, but they go together because it is all contradiction. A loves B. Vivekananda's that Jnana Yoga essays, there are beautiful in showing this. Strong words have been used by him, that a mother thinks that she loves the child, puts all her soul on her child. Perchance later, and many times it happens that the son, daughter doesn't exactly behave with the mother as if loved once. There is sometimes very bad behavior is seen from the children. And yet, this mother cannot give up that attachment. So, this is slavery. She wants to get rid of this bondage, but it is so difficult. The bond is tied around her to such an extent. She wants to get free but cannot. So she labels it as love. Instead of bondage, she calls it as love. And so there is no need to give up. You give a nice name and then you don't have to give it up anymore. It is seen so much that it becomes, you keep on piling bondage after bondage and keep on calling it love. While knowing inside that it is not love, I am bound like a slave. I cannot stop thinking about my offspring, keep on thinking about not only my children, my grandchildren, and goes on like that. It is all maya. It is a fact of life, as Vivekananda says there, that it is a statement of fact. As the universe appears to us, it is just stated there without any attempt to explain. This is maya. Then, individual trying to understand this, gives a shape to this maya. Whenever there is a word, you again give a shape to it. So, Shankara has brought in his argument a beautiful point here, that the opponent, as it were, for argument, that question is put to him, that tell me, in whom is this maya? That question itself is a tricky question. In whom is maya? And Shankara says that, why do you want to know in whom is this maya? And the questioner says, well, you say that we have to go beyond maya, we have to get rid of maya, then we will see the self. And so I need to know in whom is this maya, so that I can get rid of it. Shankara says, answers, let whosoever has it worry about it. Why are you worrying? You need not worry. The one who has maya, let that fellow worry about it. And the questioner says, but I have maya myself. Then Shankara says, so you know, why are you asking me? Something that you already know, you don't have to ask me. This is a function of maya again, to try to find the locus of maya. To where it is, that question itself comes in Maya. That where is it, that where, when, how, these are all aspects of Maya, aspects of division. And therefore, we shall continue the discussion of this in our next class, inshallah, if God permits. Today the time is over. Any questions? Okay, Charles and George. Earlier, George used to ask the questions only. Now, Charles seems to have taken up the mantle.
What is the difference between being bound to someone and therefore you put up with their bad behavior, or seeing God in someone and sacrificing because they're God?
The difference is, when you see God, you see the oneness, that here and there it is same, and therefore the love is possible. When you are bound to someone through attachment, that bondage depends on the perception of distinction, that I am so and so, and that is my son, my daughter, my friend, my so-and-so. So it is dependent on that I and that person being intrinsically separate. But seeing God, of course, it is a state of spiritual realization, but one can practice by trying to see God in others. Then you serve, you love, but you do not demand anything. You do not have that feeling of demand. In the worldly relations, there it is a demand that you present. In love, therefore, you feel sad if your beloved does not do what you want him or her to do. There are occasions of clashes and quarrels there, and yet the bondage is not given up because of that. It is so much severe that in spite of all the troubles, you don't want to give it up.
But you just said, if you don't demand anything.
Yeah.
Even though there are a lot of troubles, you don't demand anything. I'm not sure I see the difference.
Where?
In other words, if someone behaves badly towards you,
yeah,
and you see God in them, you don't demand anything from them, so would you accept the bad behavior?
You accept, you say that I not question of accepting as such. It is not a difference between you and that person then. So, who is behaving bad? There, who is behaving bad then? You are behaving good in this body, and you are the same, you are behaving bad in the other body.
The attitude that you
have is different. Yes, becomes different. Yes. Yes, George? Yes.
Yeah.
It is different ways God has to love to show the love. There is no subject object in that love. It is like love that you have for yourself. If you have, say, you have to take a transcendental view. If you have a cataract, then you get surgically removed. So, is it killing somebody? Is it killing someone? Do you do it out of hatred for yourself? It is a surgery done, cutting, but it is not done out of hatred, but out of love. So, similarly, the one divine being, it is from that angle Please don't misunderstand me. That doesn't mean that we have to say that my killing of so many people out of jealousy and hatred is fine. It is the God's way. At a transcendental level, it is God's way. But not at this plane of where we understand I and you as different. So, where there is no distinction seen, then it is no problem. You know, you do not, as one saint says, that if you bite your tongue, the teeth bit the tongue. Now, therefore, do you get angry and break your teeth? Hey, why? They bit the tongue. Come on, let me break them. No, you don't have that kind of feeling. So, because there it is the idea that realization of oneness is there. Wherever you get that realization, there you have then that killing and other things that appear from a mundane plane, their content, their meaning gets completely altered there.
Like, you meet people very rarely, but you meet them. Everything is fine in the world. You can give them a big long spiel about this is going off the track and this is terrible and everything. And oh, that's fine. That's wonderful. In other words, everything is gone.
If you get to that level, then it is all fine. You really see it as all fine, not otherwise.
Yeah, but 9 out of 10 people, you ask them, is that guy nuts or
it is.
I mean, you question. I mean, you get down to the insane asylum, you get a few people like that.
Well, those few people need to be dealt with. That is the plane at which this act has been done, that gets commensurately adjusted or retorted at that very plane. There is the high in the high tide gets matched by the low tide.
Yeah.
So there is good, there is bad. But God is neither good nor bad in any of these senses. Okay, Abhijit, you have a question.
I know that I am a conscious being, and I can assume that all people here, they are conscious beings. How do I know that a book is a conscious being? What is it conscious of?
Is it
conscious of itself or its surroundings?
Ask the book what you are conscious of.
How
will the book know that you are conscious? You don't have a way to know the book as conscious. Just as the book doesn't have a way to know.
I don't know if anybody else is conscious. I just know I am conscious.
Well, it is exactly that you are conscious. Do you have a way to say that others are not conscious?
No.
So you have to give everything, every being, the benefit of doubt to begin with, that they too may have consciousness. Let us begin like that, you know. What do you have against saying that the book doesn't have consciousness?
It doesn't have instruments of consciousness.
Well, the instruments of consciousness are consciousness has those instruments also have consciousness. How do you think that those are the instruments of consciousness? Absence of those is not consciousness. Because you cannot be conscious without it, you shouldn't think that the others cannot be conscious without it. You may say that plants have no consciousness because they don't eat like human beings eat. That is no reason to assume that the consciousness is not there in plants. You can demonstrate it.
What does it mean that a book has consciousness?
What does it mean that Yogatma Ananda or Abhijit has consciousness?
That I can say that I exist.
That the book also will say in its book language that I exist. It is, how would you know that the book doesn't say, you do not understand the language of book. A further proof I can give you that the book has consciousness. First thing is that there are people who, when they develop their understanding and awareness, they can see everything as conscious. Second thing, that you develop love for the book. You associate with something and you develop a love for it. It is, that shows a consciousness there too, that it is reciprocating your dealings. That is a conscious thing. And there are many other ways you can understand that everything is full of consciousness. The first obvious way is that you cannot really show a particular criterion by which to decide that something is living and non-living. Please read Jagdish Chandra Basu's research work. It is that he has shown that there is metals also respond in the same way as human beings respond. It is therefore he says that you cannot really show that there are things a distinction like living and non-living. He concludes his paper by this saying this, that the very idea that there is a distinction like living and non-living has no basis. So it is, there is no basis by which you can say that this is living and non-living. It is a beautiful topic, you know, I had given talks on this particular topic earlier too, that how you get stages, like can you say virus, it is conscious or not conscious. A very good example, and one who got Nobel Prize for doing research on virus, Max Delbruck, his name. Max Delbruck. His paper was a very beautiful paper, and the title of that paper was The Riddle of Life. So if you read that paper, you will see that he also comes to this understanding. You cannot say virus is just one single molecule, for all purposes just a matter. And still, can you call virus non-living? It is, it multiplies and so forth. How can you say that it is unconscious? So therefore, you cannot really draw a line of separation at all. Everything is full of consciousness. Jagdish Chandra Basu, in fact, concludes his paper by quoting from the Upanishad, that the one who sees the one life pulsating in all different forms is really the knower. Don't kill it. Who told you to kill it? Who told you to kill it? It is the newspapers. Otherwise, newspapers will get killed, you know, if they don't get news. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarehi Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinesrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko mantrah tasya namaniyani कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।